Morning, people. Today's daf in Nida's daf Chav Ches. We are on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Beis. To review, we talked about the discharge of a placenta. The only thing that came out of the woman's placenta, we don't know where the baby is. So, what did the Mishnah teach us? Well, going all the way back to daf Chavav Amud Aleph. So, the Mishnah says the house is tamei. Meaning that we're going to assume that at one point in time the baby came out. We don't know where the baby is. We really are not sure when the baby came out. We don't even know what happened to the baby. Probably disintegrated at one point in time. All we have right now going for us is just the visual of a placenta. But the Mishnah says that the house is tamei. And the Mishnah goes on to say that the shuli is not really a vlad. We know that. We know the placenta is not a baby. But we do know, however, that the placenta is a siman. It indicates that there was a baby there, and therefore the house is tamei, meaning, again, not the house, the contents of the house. Good. And then we came on to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon says, Nima kavlad ad shelo yatsa. No, baby disintegrated before the baby came out. While the baby's in utero, obviously, even if the baby's dead, rachman l'tzlan, the baby's not going to give off tuma, it's tuma blua. In other words, it's enveloped, absorbed inside the mother. And after it emerges, well, it disintegrated before it emerges, and because it disintegrated before it emerged, so therefore, even upon its emergence, it's not going to be, the house is not going to be tamei. Now, what we learned yesterday, the very end of yesterday's daf, is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, which is Rabbi Shimon, would say the following. Even though the house is not tamei, mom is. Right? Even though the house is not tamei, but mom certainly is. She had a later, she gave birth. She gave birth to the baby, meaning there's no such thing as a placenta without a baby. There was a baby, and the baby disintegrated. And so now the baby has been reduced to some sort of liquid form. The baby came out of the mother. The mother's tamei leida. In fact, the last thing we saw yesterday is that the pasuk, Isha ki sazria v'yalda zachor, she was mazria, and then she gave birth to a zachor. Obviously, 9 months, you know, took place in between. But the Gemara darshins that just like the zera that comes into her is in a liquid state, so too, God forbid, the baby comes out in a liquid state, she's considered to have given birth. That still qualifies as a leida. So mom is tumas leida, even though the house is not tamei leida. Which brings us to the following question. Actually, it doesn't bring us to the following question. We had this question already, but we're going to still respond to this question today. So why isn't the house tamei? Meaning, so if, in fact, mom gave birth, and the Gemara acknowledges at the end of yesterday's daf that even according to Rabbi Shimon, mom is tumas leida. She gave birth. She doesn't know. Obviously, she doesn't know if it's a male or if it's a female. But it doesn't matter. Mom gave birth. So if mom gave birth, and unfortunately we do have the human remains now in the house. So how come the house is not tummy? The contents of the house is not tummy. So we already addressed this question yesterday. And what was our answer yesterday? So the answer brought to us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Again, all this is explaining Rabbi Shimon. Right? In other words, just a big header about the first half of today's daf. We are all in explanation now of Rabbi Shimon. So the first explanation is Bittel Barov. Meaning, what do you have over here? I have, unfortunately, a fetus inside that died and dissolved, dissolved, and it's turned into a liquid, and it's now getting mixed in with the other fluids and liquids and juices that are inside the mother. So when it is discharged, when it's expelled from the mother, so it's mixed in with other things, bittul barov. That's Rav Yochanan's explanation in terms of why the house is not tamei. Meaning, if it were just the baby itself, the dissolved baby itself, so then, yeah, you'd be right. The house would be tamei, because then you have human remains in the house. But because it is not just the baby itself, but it's the baby mixed in with other things, so you have the concept of bittul barov. Okay. That was answer number one that we saw yesterday. And today we start off the day with a different approach, a different answer altogether. And who is this answer provided by? Rav Yochanan's brother-in-law. His brother-in-law, his chavrusa, his friend for life. Literally, until death did they part. Remember, Reish Lakish died, and Rav Yochanan was inconsolable. So, Amalei Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, let me give a little GPS over here. We're on Chav Zayin Amud Beis, we're on the bottom of the Amud, we are Reish Lakish Amar. It's the first wide line on the page. 5 lines from the bottom. Reish Lakish Amar, Shpir Shetarfuhu, Bemeimav Nasa Kemeshnis Navlova suraso. It's deformed. It's so absolutely deformed. And a human remains that's so deformed that you can't tell it's human anymore no longer gives off tumas meis. It's a totally different approach. It's not a bitul berov approach. It's the deformity of the human remains. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, what exactly, when we say deformed, what do we mean? Rashi shetarfu kamo beitzim trufos bekara shemachu uvalvaluhu. We have the word trefa. It comes up elsewhere. It comes up in the Gemara in Chulin, scrambled eggs. Okay, in English we have this expression that we use also. It's scrambled eggs. So here it's so scrambled, it's so messed up. So therefore, it's no longer human. It's no longer considered human remains. Okay. Now let's continue. Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Meis Shenivlav Lavatziras Minalan De Tahor. So Rabbi Yochanan asked Reish Lakish a simple question: how do you know this? Now, any conversation we have between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is funny because all of Reish Lakish's Torah was learned from Rabbi Yochanan, although perhaps he did have other rebbeim. It seems that way because he often argues with Rabbi Yochanan. So, yeah. So, okay. So, how do you know? So, Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish that once the human remains become so deformed that it no longer gives off tumah. Where do you get that from? Ilam emahadam Rabbi Shabtam Rabbi Yitzchak Migad La of Amrilam Rabbi Yitzchak Migad La Amrav Shatai. So the Gemara quotes the following halacha in the name of Rabbi Shabtai or Rabbi Yitzchak Migad La. Meishin Isra Vishaldo Kayames Tamei. If I have a mace that was burnt but still intact. Okay. So we're going to speak a lot today about cremation and ashes and, you know, some of this is going to be hard to visualize. It's going to be hard to picture. The Gemara gives the following scenario. It's burnt. The corpse is burnt. But shildo kayemis. But it still has its form. Okay? We'll try later on this morning to give a better description of what exactly that means. Okay? Tame. So the Gemara quotes, it's not a braisa, it's a memra, but Shildo Kayem is Tame. So this is going to give off Tama. So if it's burnt but still has the shape of a human body, it's Tame. Maisa Haya Vitima Lo Psachim Gedolim Vitira Lo Psachim Ketanim. In fact, there was an incident where they were Metame Psachim Gedolim and they were Metaher Psachim Ketanim. Big entrances versus small entrances. Now, big entrances. This is funny. What do we mean when we say big entrances? So Rashi says, four tvachim. That's a big entrance. Four tvachim, you're talking about maybe a foot by a foot. It's a window. It's not what we would call a big entrance. But anyway, so if it's a big entrance, so that is tamei. And if it's a small entrance, that's going to be tar. If you take a look at the Rashi, on the top of the next amud, Rashi goes on to explain, what difference is it whether the entrance is big or small? So Rashi writes, "Apsuchem arba'a kishar meisim shleimim shagadolam atzilan ala ketanim dekayim alan meis pizcho ba'arba'a im hu bebayis kol apsachim temeim v'im pesach pasuach me arba'a tahor." So we have the following halacha: if there's a corpse in this room right now. Now this room is not a great example because this room has only one egress, right? I don't know how the fire department goes for this, but we have no other way to get out of here other than that one doorway over there. Okay, those windows don't exactly work. Fine. So it's not a great example, but okay. So in this one room with this one doorway, so if there's a corpse in this room, so you know how the tumma works. The tumma goes up, hits the roof, spreads, right, drops back down. Now, I understand that beyond that doorway is a hallway, so. Now, it's really not the best case scenario. Let's talk a lot of just about a standalone room or a standalone house where there are various doorways exiting out of the house. Now, strictly speaking, the tumah only goes up to the internal area of this room and drops down into the internal area of the room. Strictly speaking, if I have a doorway, the area directly underneath the doorway isn't really tumah, but you know that the corpse is going to be taken out of this room. Okay, so because the corpse is going to be taken out of this room, so we forecast a little bit. Well, which door is going to be taken out of? So if it's equal opportunity, meaning it could have gone out any door, So then we're basically going to say all the doorways, all the areas directly underneath the lintel of the doorway is going to be tame. If, however, there is a clear path in terms of how the corpse is going to be taken out of the room, so if there's a clear path, that area is going to be tame, that doorway is going to be tame, and all the other doorways are going to be saved, so to say. So size is going to be a great determinant of what is going to be considered a clear exit for this corpse.
But what's that? I'm talking about the non-exit doors. If they have large doors and they're non-exit doors, does that matter?
I don't know. Meaning, we're assuming everything is equal except for the size. Okay, so Rashi goes on to explain that if I have one doorway which is quote-unquote large, and when I say doorway, I don't really mean a door. I mean just some egress, some way to get out. So if it's big enough where we can just easily get it out, that's considered big, and that's going to be considered the easy way out. Okay. So Rashi writes, I'm going to reread that, the Dekaimalan, the second line of Rashi, Meis Pischo Ba'arba'a, Imu Ba'ba'is Kol Apsachim Tameim. If one of the doorways, which is 4 by 4 is fachim. Again, it's not, you're not talking about a large egress, but it's large enough, it's a foot by foot, where I can easily get the mace out through that egress, through that little hole in the wall. Okay, and then Rashi just clarifies, that's talking about the area underneath. If there's another room next to, adjacent to this room, so then Tumah can transfer from one room to another through even the smallest little hole. Okay, but anyway, that's the point. And so here now, again, let's go back. In our Gemara, we're talking about where there's a corpse which was burnt, but it still has a form, right? Shildo Kayemis. So the Psachim Gedolim are going to be Tameh, and the Psachim Ketanim are going to be Tahor. Okay. And so now Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, if this is all you have to work with, you're in trouble. Meaning, if this is your entire proof, it's not such an exciting proof. Because now Rav Yochanan's continuing to talk to his brother-in-law. We're on the top of Chav Ches Amad Aleph. V'kadayakta mina. Now, what did you walk away with from that statement? Apparently that statement is agreed to, it's not qualified, there's no argument over here. And what did you walk away with that? Time of the Shilda Kayemes. Well, you said, oh, you know why? Because the corpse is intact. Ha Shildo Halav Hachi Tahor. But if the corpse is not intact, meaning it's a burnt body, but the corpse is not intact, what we would call cremated, so then you thought that the correct diuk is that everything's tahor. Meaning the doorways are tahor, the house is tahor. So, but the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan says to his brother-in-law, Dok min alahai gisa. You could have gone the other way. Meaning, Shildo kayemes with the Torah lo psachim ketanim, alav hachi psachim ketanim nami tamayim. Dechol chad v'chad chazer lafuke chad v'chad ever. You could have so gone the other way on that. Meaning, yes, there's a difference whether the human form is intact or the human form is not intact. But what you could have said is that a human form is not intact, meaning I have a burnt body in this room, right? Shildo enokayemis, meaning it no longer has a human form. It's not been reduced to ashes, but it's burnt and it's scorched and it's decomposed. You could have said that not only is the house tamei, not only the large doorways tamei, even the small doorways are tamei. In fact, it's a better argument because once it's been reduced to all you have now are just pieces of human remains, so you can easily take it out, and you don't need a large entrance, and even a small entrance would suffice. So Rav Yochanan says to his brother-in-law, if this is the proof that you have, it's not such a strong proof. If anything, it might indicate otherwise, that a burnt body is going to give off tumah. So the Gemara now continues to seek a source. How do I know, how does Reish Lakish know that a burnt body, burnt human remains, is no longer tamei? Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Rav Yochanan Dama Kaman, Kirebi Eliezer, Dinan Efer Srufin, Rabbi Lazar Omer Shir Barova. So the Gemara quotes the Mishnah Olos. And the Mishnah Olos says that if I have Efer Srufin, if I have ashes of a body, Rabbi Lazar says it's going to give off tuma, and you need an amount, rova hakav. Okay, it's a shear, an amount of ashes. So hechidami meishin yisrof v'shildo kayemis. So now the Gemara says, now, can we try to better qualify what that means? Meaning the body is burnt, but the human form is still intact. I'm Rabbi Kagon Shesirfo al gabe katavla. So one illustration the Gemara gives is that it's burnt on a table, right? Katavla, on some sort of table, but meaning that it's burnt and it's even reduced to ashes, but because it's almost like in a mold, correct? Rabbi Kagon Shesirfo al gabe apodrim. You burnt it on Evan Shayish, on marble. Okay, in other words, same basic idea. It's in some sort of form of mold, so therefore it's been reduced to ashes, but still has a shape of a human body. And Ravina, I'm actually going to Ichrich Achrich. And Ravina gives a third example where it was burnt, not reduced to ashes, but singed. Singed externally. But in other words, but still, the form of the body is still there. Okay. Now, where does that all take us? It basically takes us now to the idea that we were looking for another explanation of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that when the baby comes out, this baby does not give off tumas meis. The baby came out in a disintegrated form, in a dissolved form. It does not give off tumas meis. So our first explanation, which was yesterday's daf, Rav Yochanan says it's because bitavarov. That was yesterday's explanation. Today's explanation provided to us by Reish Lakish is the deformity of the human body. If the human body is so deformed, so therefore it's not going to give off tumas meis. How does he know that? He says if a body is burned, so it no longer gives off tumas meis. Now, How does Reish Lakish know that? So that was up for debate. The Gemara tried to learn it on the bottom of the previous Amud, top of today's Amud, that once a body is burnt, it no longer gives off Toma. The Gemara thought it not to be an exciting proof. The Gemara quoted a Mishnah Olos that supports Rav Yochanan, that even if the body is burnt, so Shir Barova, you need a Rova, you need a certain amount, which indicates just the opposite, meaning not like Reish Lakish, that if a body is burnt, the ashes are going to give off tumas. Oh, well. Okay, so in other words, it seems to be in the Gemara, a machlokish between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, whether or not a body's burnt to ashes, reduced to ashes, whether or not it gives off tumas. Interesting, the Rambam here follows the opinion of Reish Lakish. Right? It's an oddity, meaning usually the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So we're going to go like Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says the body's burnt and reduced to ashes. It doesn't give off tuma. And Reish Lakish says it does give off tuma. Other way around. Rav Yochanan says it does give off tuma. Reish Lakish says it doesn't give off tuma. Okay. So it is interesting that the Rambam goes like Reish Lakish. Okay. Fine. And obviously, it's been years ago now since I visited Poland. But in Poland, they have in Majdanek, one of the camps that was left intact. Nazis didn't get a chance to destroy that camp, so they do have still. I don't know if you visited it. It's heartbreaking. They still have the ashes from the Holocaust. They have an entire mound of ashes. It's rather heartbreaking. So right, that would. It would then be a machlokus between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, and then a question of how to paskin, but it would be a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Rav Yochanan whether that pile of ashes gives off tumma. Okay. Yeah.
That's the body, it's a shape.
Right. Correct. And they still have the shape.
Well, yeah. Sure.
Right.
According to Rambam, then the ashes would.
Right. He goes like Reish Lakish that it does not. It does not give off tumma. No, the Rambam goes like Reish Lakish, which in of itself is interesting. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. We're continuing the Gemara. We're on Chav Ches Amud Aleph. Hamapelas Yad Chatucha V'Regel Chatucha Imot Me'aleida. Okay, a little bit more in terms of discharges of the mother. We've now spent about a week talking about various things that came out of mom that look like a human, look like something other than a human, and whether or not mom has qualified as given birth. This is going to be one of the last things we're going to discuss in terms of unidentified objects. Here it is an identified object, but all it is a hand. Or all it is a foot. Okay, all this, Rachman Aslan. But, Amapelas Yad Chatucha, Veragal Chatucha, Emot Me'aleida. So the Gemara quotes in a Braisa, that if just giving birth to a hand or just giving birth to a foot is considered a Leida. Now, this hand or this foot is not the birth, meaning obviously it indicates that there was a baby inside and this was part of a baby. It's almost similar to the placenta talk.
It's actually more concrete than a placenta.
Huh?
It's a more concrete evidence. Than
correct. It's evidence. That's the word I'm looking for. It really is evidence. It's not the birth itself, but it's evidence that there was a birth. So just like when the mother gives birth to a placenta, we know that mom gave birth to a baby. We just don't know. We can't identify the baby, but mom had a birth of a baby. Here too also, if there's a hand or there's a foot that came out, that's evidence that there was a baby inside. So, and ein choshesh in shema miguf atum ba'u. Don't worry, says the Gemara, says the Braitza, that maybe this comes from such a disfigured body, which would not be considered a birth, right? Kind of like what we started off the parak with, like a chaticha, like a totally unidentifiable mess. Rav Chisa, Rabbi Ravuna, Dami Tavai, Enosna, La Yimei Tohar. My time, Ema, Hirchika, Leidasa. But here's what we're not going to say. Meaning, granted that it's a birth. Granted she's Tumas Leida. Granted that after 80 days she's going to have to bring a carbon. I give you all that. But she's not going to enjoy one of the benefits of giving birth to a baby, which is Yimei Tohar. Right? She gets days in which, when she bleeds, the bleeding is going to be considered tahor. She doesn't get that. Why? For the following reason. Because we don't know when the baby came out. Meaning all we have right now is a solid piece of evidence in front of us that she did have a baby. We don't know when the baby came. Baby may have came in conjunction with the hand, in some sort of liquid state. Baby may have kind of trickled out of the body a day earlier, 2 days earlier. We simply don't know. And because we don't know, so therefore, she may have already experienced her Yemei Tohar. Meaning birth may have taken place a week ago, 2 weeks ago. We simply don't know. So because we don't know when to pinpoint the actual time of birth, and therefore we don't know when to give her Yemei Tohar. So Mezer of Yosef, Amapel, Vinyadom, Ma'ipil, Teshel, Zachon, Nekeva. So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. We're going to see the Mishnah tomorrow. A woman who miscarried, and she doesn't know what came out of her. She miscarried over a river, the river took it away, she didn't get a chance to look at it, she just simply doesn't know. So, Teisha L'Zachor Nekeva. So she's going to have to sit as if she gave birth to either a boy or a girl, we just don't know. But the Gemara's point is as follows, Yitzhak Adach HaKol Ki Agavna, Emeir Chikalei Dasalif Nevelanida. So the Gemara wants to know, if you're right, that when she miscarried, we're going to definitively say she gave birth. But if you're right, we don't know when she gave birth, so say Ulanida. Meaning, one of the things that we should take into consideration is, maybe the birth took place a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Could be that she's currently right now in Ida. And that's a possibility. Amar Abai, Itan Lanida, Havamina, Mevia Karba, Veina Necha. Kamash Malan Denecha. So the Gemara says, no, because it would have been misleading. If we would have written in the word ulanida, people would have said, oh, you know what the Mishnah is teaching us? It's teaching us that it may not have even been a birth. Meaning, she discharged, she miscarried, but we don't even know if it's a baby. And I might have thought that, yeah, she'll bring a carbon on the chance that she had a baby, but don't eat the carbon, right? Tell the Kohen not to eat the carbon, because you don't even know if you have to bring the carbon. Bring the carbon out of Suffolk, but don't eat the carbon. What the Mishnah wants us to make sure that we know is that if she miscarried and she had a baby, the assumption is that she definitely had a baby, even though we don't know what gender it was. Okay. We don't know when exactly the baby came, but we know there was a baby. The carbon is brought, the carbon's even eaten. Okay. One more point regarding a limb coming out. Let's say, the baby stuck out its hand and then retracted. Okay? And if that sounds strange, it shouldn't be so strange. It happened in Chumash. All right, Bereishis Perek Lamed Ches, which the Gemara is about to quote, where the hand came out and the hand snapped right back in. So Hosi Yisur Bar Yisrael Vechzira Imot Tamei Leida. Mom is considered Tumas Leida. Shenem Ravihi B'Letav Iktein Yad. Okay, let me see if I get this right. Parrots came out first, right? Is that accurate? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say it is. And Zerach came out second. But, right, that we're talking about the twins of Tamar. Right, Tamar was pregnant with twins. She had twins. But what happened first is that Zerach stuck his hand out. They tied a red string around it to indicate that this was number one. He retracted his hand in, and then Peretz, which is how he got his name, right? The word Peretz means to break forth. So he came out first, followed then by his brother Zerach. Okay. Mezer of Yudot, the Ubras Yado Einimo, Choshesh Lesechol Davar. So the Gemara challenges because we have another statement, which is, it seems to be that this is a Braisa. If the fetus extends his hand, Einimo Choshesh Lesechol Davar. At that point, mom doesn't have to worry about anything. Anything. So Amar Rav Nachman Ledidim Efrash Le Minei Derav Huna Lachush Choshesheth Yemei Torah Lo Yavina La Ad Denafek Rube. Meaning, as in terms of giving birth, we're going to be choshesh that mom in fact has given birth, but in terms of giving her all the benefits of having a baby, that will not take place until the baby, the body of the baby, the rest of the body of the baby comes out. V'ha'inei Mo Choshesh Lechol Davar Kamar. Not such a great answer considering the fact that the statement that was said in the Brice is, mom doesn't have to worry about anything. Right? That's difficult. So, Amar Abai, Ein Choshesh L'chol Davar Midaraisa, V'Midarabana Choshesh. So the Gemara says, okay, Min HaTorah, it's not a birth. The extension of just a hand out of the mother, if we're just without any of the rabbinic concerns, it's nothing. As we're about to learn in just a moment, birth is the exit of the head. The head emerging out of the body, that qualifies legally as the birth of the baby. So if all that comes out is just a hand, min haTorah, that's nothing. What happens is that the Chachamim come in and the Chachamim say, wait a second. Right? People are going to get confused. So you know what? The midrabanan, as a rabbinic safeguard, anytime the baby sticks anything out of the mother, later. Vis-a-vis Tumah. Meaning, okay, as a rabbinic safeguard. V'hakra kamar, so the Gemara says, okay, but one last small issue, which is, didn't we quote a pasuk? Midrabanu kras machta ba'alma. No, that pasuk that we quoted is just an asmachta, meaning that really, leida is only considered when the head comes out, and really, in terms of the parrot Zerach wasn't really born. Meaning, when Zerach stuck his hand out, he wasn't born yet. Yes, it's true his hand came out. Yes, it's even true that they tied a red piece of string around his hand as his hand came out. But that doesn't mean he was born. In fact, he wasn't born. In fact, just the opposite. Peretz was really the firstborn. Right. Zerach was not the firstborn. If anything, the Torah illustrates that sticking your hand out is not considered a birth. Asmachta. Meaning it's really rabbinic legislation, but one of the things that the Chachamim love doing is attaching their legislation to a pasuk in Chumash. It's a hook, but it's an asmachta ba'alma. It's just a hook that they hang on the pasuk, but really it's a din derabanan. Okay, Ad kan. We start now the next Mishnah and we enter into a new topic, not a totally new topic. We're still talking about birth, but we're going to take a break from all the deformities that we've been speaking about now for a week of really unfortunate episodes of birth. And now we talk about where the baby comes out. We just not are totally sure what gender the baby is. Hamapelas tumtum v'androgynous. Teshev lezachar ulenekeva. Woman gives birth to tumtum androgynous. One of the popular topics in Shas comes up often where the baby is gender confused. Okay, these are things that we know, we're just reviewing. Tumtum. The genitalia is covered. There's a membrane, a thin membrane, that's covering the genitalia. So we simply do not know what the gender is. We do not know if it's a boy or if it's a girl. It is possible. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere talks about how later in life that membrane may come off, right? Surgically could also possibly come off, right? I'm sure he or she would like to know whether he is a she or vice versa. But in the meantime, however, at the point of birth, it's covered, so we just simply don't know. That's what's called tum-tum. And the other term is an androgynous. Androgynous is where both genitalia are present, both male and female. Right, in English, not in English, but the term we use to describe this is an hermaphrodite. The term androgynous itself is not even a Hebrew word, right? It's a Greek word, right? It's a Greek word. Andro is man, and the androgynous, the jinn, is referring to a female, right? We borrow that terminology. A doctor for females is called a gynecologist, GYN. So in other words, it's a Greek word. So describing that this child has both male and female. Okay. We would call it today a hormonal imbalance. Okay, this is, so mom gave birth to this, right? Either a tum-tum and androgynous. So now, again, we're clinicians over here. We're just interested right now in one aspect of this birth, which is tumas leida. Meaning, mom gave birth, and we know what the halach is. If it's a male, 733. If it's a female, 14 and 66. And here, what comes out is, we don't know. So it's gender confused. So, teshev lezachar ulenekeva. So mom should sit as if she gave birth to a male and a female. So both. So, and we already know, we know the routine. Rashi, in fact, right, Rashi explains this all in about five or six words, because we all know the routine. Yimei Torah lezachar, v'yimei tuma d'nekeva. 14 days on the tuma side, right, on the chance that this is a she, and only 26 days on the Torah side on the chance that she is a he. Okay? Tumtum v'zachar, androgynous v'zachar. Then the Mishnah goes on to the following scenario. Let's say it's twins, and one of them is a male, and the other one's a tumtum. One of them is a male, and the other one's an androgynous. Teshev v'zachar nekeva. So the Gemara is going to ask the question later on. Kind of a no-brainer. Meaning we don't know what the tumtum is, we don't know what the androgynous is. So what do they do? Zachar unekeva, meaning we have to take both into consideration. Even though we know one of them, in other words, it's twins that came out, and one of them for sure was a male, but we don't know what the other one is. Tumtum unekeva, androgynous unekeva, teshev lenekeva bilvad. If it's a tumtum unekeva, androgynous unekeva, so then mom treats it like an akeva. Remember, we learned this earlier. If the twins that came out, and one is for sure a boy, and the other one's for sure a girl, it's 1466. Meaning, the boy doesn't upset the girl's status, vis-a-vis mom. Because since the girl's numbers are 14 and 66, it includes the boy's 733. I know that the boy's 33 starts on day 8, but still, if it's twin births, and it's a boy and it's a girl, so it is unquestionably 1466. Here, if it's a girl and it's an androgynous, so you could go either way. Meaning, if he is a she, so good, so that's two girls. Mazel tov. If she is a he, so it's a boy and a girl. Okay, but in other words, we know for sure a girl came out, so therefore it's 1466.
If it's two boys, is it concurrent, just one set of...
It's not going to be concurrent, meaning if it's two boys and they came out in one birth, so it's going to be 733.
But just one term. It's not going to be for each.
Right,
just
correct.
Concurrent for both.
Correct. Yatza, I think it's only one term. I think it's only one term. Yatza mechuta.
You should know this. I should know this.
Yatza mechuta chal mesuris mishi yatza ruba harehu kayalad. Okay. If the baby comes out mechutach, meaning, God forbid, it's cut up into pieces, all mesuras, or what we call breech, right, comes out feet first, so therefore, mishiyetz arubo. When exactly, at what legal point precisely is it considered born? When the majority of its body comes out. Hare yukiyulud. Yatsa kadarka, but if it comes out in the normal head-down position, Achiyetze Rov Rosho. Then all you need for it to come out is just the head. Even though the head is not going to be the majority of its body, it does not matter. The head is considered its birth. And when exactly is that going to be? That's when the forehead comes out. So when the forehead comes out, that at that point precisely, it's going to be considered a born entity. That's the legal point of birth. The Gemara starts off. Hashem tum tum lechudei. Van Jaganus Lechudei. Amatesh of Zachar Nekeva, Tum Tum Vazach and Jaganus Zachar Mibaye. The Gemara is asking now the obvious question, which we posed already in the Mishnah. Once we know Tum Tum and Jaganus are gender confused, so then what do we gain in the Mishnah by that next case in the Mishnah? What if it's a Tum Tum and a male? Well, so the Gemara says, so we don't know. Good, it's the same we don't know when the Tum Tum came out by itself. What did you gain by that? So the Gemara gives an answer which we saw already earlier in the Perek. The gender is determined at the point of conception. And specifically, what exactly, who experienced Mazria first, the man or the woman, the husband or the wife. Okay, and I didn't have an explanation then. I still don't have an explanation now exactly how that works. Okay. I'll let people smarter than me figure it out. In the meantime, however, I might have thought that if the determination of the gender is based on the husband or the wife being Mazria first, and we have over here a male and a question mark, so maybe we could say, well, the male's a male, so maybe you can argue, and the male's a male because, who has to be Mazria first?
Woman.
The woman. Okay, good. So that means that must have meant that mom was Mazria first. So this question mark, maybe this question mark is also a male, because there we have the boy to prove it. So aim amidai zachar, einam zachar. That's what the havamina might have been. Kamash malan, aim hashneim izru bevasachas zu zachar vizu nekeva. So the Gemara says, okay, but it could be that they were Mazria at the same exact time, which then leaves the gender up in the air. And so, yes, it's true, this one turned into a male, but maybe the question mark could still be a female. And, of course, we all know that, right, we see twins come out male and female. So, we know there's a possibility for it to be male and female, and what's going to be our explanation? Simultaneous Mazria. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav. Tum Tum Adjogna Sharao Loven O Odom. Okay. Now, we're going to spend the rest of today talking about the following. This baby that comes out as a tumtum or as an androgynous, we don't know the gender. In other words, it could be male, it could be female. And there's another option also, by the way, could be it's its own category. Meaning, right, there could be a third box, right? In other words, right, whenever you fill out any form, it asks you whether you're male or whether you're female. It could be the androgynous has now for himself a third box, which is, I'm an androgynous, meaning I'm, right, not male, not female. Maybe it's not a question of he doesn't know which one to check. He's a totally separate category. Yeah, it's a good analogy. The Gemara here doesn't make that analogy, but it is a good analogy. The Rishonim to make that analogy. So the okay. So now here's what we know. We're going to talk in terms of colors. It's an easy way to discuss it. The Gemara is going to use this type of conceptualization. A male to become Tamei, so he needs, the color for him is white. White for him is the color of Tuma, meaning he has a discharge, whether it's Keri, whether it's Zav, but for him, the color is white. For a woman, red. The color is red. Okay? Meaning so that for a woman to become Tamei, either she's an Ida, or she's a Zava, but in other words, it's not just a discharge, it's a discharge of blood, which is colored red. If Lu Yitzu, had it be that the man had red coming out, which means that he's got medical issues, but, right? But he's not Tamei. And if a woman has white coming out of her, she's not Tamei. Meaning, so it has to specifically be the man has, excuse me, a white discharge, and a woman has a red discharge. Okay, those are the grant rules. Now we can talk about, sorry, Now we can talk about a tumtum and an androgynous. Where, let's envision the following scenario. Amar Rav Nachman, right, I should have started off with the introduction and then read into the Gemara. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Tumtum Vajagunas, Shira'o Lovin O Odam. Let's say they had either a white or a red discharge. Okay. Ein Chayavan Albias Mikdash. So, they walk into the base of Mikdash.
No, they're not
Tumtum. Right? Now, are they Tamei? It's funny.
It's as if it's a man or a woman.
Right. In other words, right. I don't know. Yeah. Let's put it that way. But because we don't know the gender, and because only one color came out of them, so they walk into the base of Mikdash, they're not going to be tummy. Let me say that better. They walk into the base of Mikdash, they're not going to be chayiv. All right, that's a better way to say it.
Is it because there's a suffix?
Now, what Ben is saying is what I'm trying to avoid saying. Which is why I'm stumbling right now, right? Ben wants to say because it's a suffix. I don't want to say that because we know the rule is suffix d'oraisa l'chumra. So if it's just a question of suffix, you kind of get stuck.
Yeah, but it's suffix, we should have it. So it's
but it should have that one. You have something.
Okay, maybe that's the explanation. Let's just say it like this, okay? And I know I'm trying to avoid this, but let's just say it like this: because this person does not have a gender, does not have an assigned gender. He's not male, he's not female, and because he did have a discharge, but he doesn't know if the discharge matches his gender. So therefore, he's not chayif if he walks into the Beis Hamikdash. Okay, ein sorfin alayhem as a truma. Furthermore, he touches truma. Now, if a male had a white discharge and he touches truma, the truma's tamei, definitively. What do you do with the truma? You burn it. He is not definitively tamei. Therefore, he touches the truma. Don't burn the truma. Don't eat the truma, but don't burn it. But now let's do it this way. Let's say he has a discharge, both red and white. Okay. Did I say he? You know, I didn't mean he.
It.
Right.
It.
Let's say it had a discharge, both red and white. So now that covers the basis, right? So in other words, he could be a she or she could be a he, but we covered our basis, so therefore he's tame. Now what you would expect the next words of the Gemara to be is that what if he walks into the base of Mikdash? He's chayav. That's what you would expect. Watch. Ein chayav and abiyas Mikdash. He walks into the Mikdash, he's not chayav. This is why I wanted to avoid the whole suffix discussion. Avalstorfen aleim as a truma. But what you're going to do is you're going to burn truma. If he touches truma, you're going to burn truma. Now, it begs the question.
Yeah, why?
Well, yeah, why? Right? I understand. We don't know if he's a she or she's a he. But he had both discharges. Right? He had the red, he had the white.
Either way.
It would cover it. Why is he not going to be chayv of walking into the base of Mikdash? Shenamar, that's the next words of this brisa, or memra. Mizachar v'ad nekeva tishalechu zachar v'adai nekeva v'adais v'lo tumtum v'adrogenes. Because the Torah, when talking about who is to be taken out of the Beis Hamikdash, who is to be escorted out of the Beis Hamikdash, zachar nekeva. It's funny. The pasuk says, I don't know if funny is the right word, but mizachar v'ad nekeva. The way you could have understood the pasuk is almost like a continuum. Right. In other words, go from male to female and anything in between. Right? That's a way you could have conceptualized the pasuk. This person's in between.
Right.
Right. Somewhere between the spectrum of being male or being female, this person is right, smack in the middle. You could have said that. The Gemara over here does not say that. Zachar v'nekeva are not extremities of a continuum. They are points on the line. You either are zachar or you're Nekeva. If you're anything in the middle, the Torah doesn't talk to you. I'm not making broad general comments. I'm speaking specifically about being escorted out of the base of Mikdash. Tumas Mikdash. It's a very limited discussion. Okay, don't quote me out of context. So the but if you're in the middle, the Torah doesn't talk to you. The Gemara now wants to bring a proof that this is in fact so. That if you have a tumtum and you have an androgynous, and we know they're tumay, And how do we know they're tamei? Because they had discharges of both red and white. So we know they're tamei. But the statement of Rav is, they're not chayv on Beis HaMikdash. Does that mean they're invited into the Beis HaMikdash? Hard to imagine. But in other words, they're not going to be chayv. The Brisa says if they see red and white, so the Gemara says, isn't that the explanation? Because they're not male, they're not female, they're somewhere in the middle. The Gemara says, Amar Ulalo. Ula says you really could give a totally different explanation over here. Hamani Rebbe Eliezer he. The Gemara says no, this is Rebbe Eliezer, did not. Rebbe Lazar Omer Hasheretz Venela Mimenu. Al Halam Sheretz Uchayev Einu Chayev Al Halam Migdash. Okay. According to Rebbe Eliezer, we're talking about the person who Bishogig walked into the base of Migdash. What was his shkaga? What did he forget? So Rebbe Eliezer says what he had to have forgotten is that he came into contact with the Sheretz. But if, let's say, he forgot that he's in the base of Mikdash, doesn't count, doesn't qualify. The Shkaga has to go on the fact that he touched the Sheretz. Rabbi Kiva, Omer, V'nalam, Imenavu, Tameh, Al-Halam, Tumahu, Chayev, Enu, Chayev, Al-Halam, Mikdash. Now, Rabbi Kiva says the same thing. Now, that doesn't make any sense, because we know the drill, meaning it's the way it's constructed. There's a machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar. So what are they arguing about? There's got to be a point of argument. V'amrinan, my beinayu, v'amr chizke, sheretz v'neveli, ke beinayu. Do Rabbi Loza sever, b'inan ad yava, diada iva, sheretz idmei, b'neveli idmei? Rabbi Kiva sever, lo b'inan. So the point of debate between the two of them is, they both agree that you have to know that you came into contact with Tuma. Do you have to know exactly what Tuma you came into contact with? That's the debate. Rabbi Eliezer says that at one point you have to remember precisely what tumah he came into contact with. Was it a sheretz? Was it an avela? And Rabbi Kiva says, no, that doesn't matter. As long as you know you came into contact with tumah, that's all you need to have remembered. So lav amar Rabbi Eliezer asam beinan diada b'sheretz itme b'nevela itme hachna beinan diada ibaluban itme be'odem itme. So it could be that just like Rabbi Eliezer needs you to know specifically, did you touch the sheretz? Did you touch an avela? He also needs you to know specifically, are you tummy because of the red discharge or because of the white discharge? This person doesn't know. He may be a she may be a he. He doesn't know. She doesn't know. It doesn't know. And yes, it's true, red and white came out of it. But we don't know, right? And we know it's tame, but we simply don't know which one's tuma. So the explanation over here of this brisa could be, this is a function of this brisa being authored by Rabbi Eliezer. This lack of knowledge is going to exempt him from Beis HaMikdash. And what Rabbi Akiva would tell you is, no, it's enough. It's enough, meaning, are you tame? Yes. Do you know specifically how you're tame? No, but so what? V'rav, ma'ishna bias mikdash delo dixi mizachar v'anekeva tishalechu. Zad v'aday nekeva v'adayis v'lo tumtum, I'm sorry, nekeva v'adayis v'lo tumtum v'adraganas. So the Gemara, and the Gemara says in defense of Rav, same story. It says zachar, it says nekeva. Meaning, you're either a zachar, or you're nekeva. If you're something in the middle, you're not chayev. I'achi trumanami lo nisrov. So the Gemara says, okay, so according to Rav, simple question. Rav acknowledges that this androgynous, who had a red and white discharge, who is definitely Tameh, but not Chayv on Beis HaMikdash, so why should you burn the Truma? And he says, if you look at the bottom of the previous summit, it says, you burn the Truma, why should that be? And it dichsiv, azavet zavola, zachal nekeva, zachar vadai nekeva vadayis, velo tumtum v'androgynous. So the Gemara says, and we do have the zachar nekeva designation by the burning of Truma. Those words Zachar Nekeva mentioned over there are used for a different drasha. So since they're used for a different drasha, we no longer can use them for the drasha of Zachar Vadais, Nekeva Vadais. And the drasha is a Mitzora and all the Mayan Osav, the liquids of the mitzara, right? His spit, his urine. Hainami may buy le bemishesh lotar bemikva pratlikli cheres div Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, okay, so over here, by Bias HaMikdash, don't we also have a drasha for it as well? In that, kli cheres, I'm sorry, it's only for something that has an opportunity to be tahor. Right, but something that does not have an opportunity to become tahor, i.e. kli cheres, that does not need to be excused from the Beis HaMikdash. Imke nechto rechma adam. V'chitem ha'ikas rechman adam hava min kli matchos lo mikol tamei lanefesh nafka. Zachar u'nekeva lamali. The word zachar and nekeva were totally unnecessary. Why were they there? L'chide rav. So they're coming to teach me the halacha of rav, that for Bias Mikdash, or for the shlichus, from the excusing from the Beis HaMikdash, you're either a male or you're a female, nothing in between. The Emakula Chadravu Da'asa, the Gemara says, okay, why don't we say that the entire pasuk is dedicated to the halacha of Rav? Imkei nichtav nichtav zachar unekeva. My mi zachar v'ad nekeva? I'd call davar sheish lo tahor b'mikvah. It has to be something which is, which you could tov on the mikvah. Ihachi ki itmei b'shar tomas lo lishlachu. Amakra mi zachar mi tomas hafereshes min hazachar. So the Gemara says, I might have thought, all other tumas you should not be sent out. So the Gemara says, no, mizachar tumah fereshes min hazachar. Anything that is issued out of a zachar needs to be taken out of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so where do we stand right now? Okay, tumtum and ajajanus, right? That was the second half of today's daf, in which the Gemara says that mom gives birth to the tumtum and ajajanus. Mom is for sure tameh. Tumas zachar, tumas nekeva, we don't know. We simply don't know. The rest of today's daf was dedicated to the topic of where does the Torah not acknowledge this in-between gender of androgynous. So one example, which it seems to be the only example, would be Bias HaMikdash. Meaning that we know that if a person's tameh and he walks into the Beis HaMikdash while being tameh, he's chayv kares. However, the androgynous who had an issuance of red and white, which means for sure he's tamei, but nevertheless, because he's not either definitively a male or definitively a female, he's not going to be chayav on Bias HaMikdash. Okay, that seems to be the only exception to the rule. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the bottom of the Amud.